Well, in 2024, more of the planet's population will vote than ever before. We're talking about India. What's at stake as India votes in the world's largest election in history? To find out, we're going to get a first-hand source. We've got Curtin Uni, a PhD candidate, Avaroop Gupta, to explain things to us. Good morning, Avaroop.
Hello, good morning.
Well,
Avaroop, thanks for having me.
That's a pleasure. India is the world's largest democracy. A rare third term would mean 15 years in power for Modi. Is democracy under threat in India?
Oh, yes, like by all means. So what we are witnessing for the last 10 years is that all the institutions that were supposed to safeguard democracy, supposed to work as checks and balances to safeguard democracy, they are being systematically dismantled. And lots of upheaval is going on right now in India. So this election is probably our last chance, maybe the last chance for the voters to save democracy in the form that we have right now.
So, what are these things? What's bolstered the success of Narendra Modi?
Hindu nationalism. I mean, we have we have 1.42 billion people living in India. 80% of them are Hindus, and a sizable chunk of the Hindus are support Narendra Modi because of he is seen as the redeemer of the Hindu religion. And that's his famous personality cult on which the BJP revolves around. So the entire propaganda machinery of the BJP revolves around one man, Mr. Modi. And his famous personality cult is based on the fact that he is seen as the great redeemer of Hinduism. And he has a larger-than-life image of him that he can do no wrong. And this personality cult is basically having grave consequences for the future of Indian democracy. Because when you depend on one man and you see all performance of in the Human Development Indexes are going down, the Global Hunger Index, which is India is really low on that, the index, Global Hunger Index, and everything like malnutrition is rising in India, which shouldn't be there because India is right now the fifth largest economy in the world, and it has a economy which is the fastest growing among the large economies, but still you have people suffering from malnutrition. But the thing is that these issues are not discussed when people discuss Mr. Modi. All they discuss is what he's doing for the Hindu religion. He is seen as a incarnation of the Lord Ram. And so the issues which should matter, the livelihood issues, are not discussed when India goes to the polls. So that is a very worrisome trend, actually.
Is it naive to say that people are sort of duped in the way that, it sounds very Trumpish, sounds very MAGA, but on a Hindu scale?
Yeah. It's actually, it is. I mean, what we saw, you remember, the Ram Temple inauguration that we saw in January?
Mm-hmm.
3 months ago. Yeah, it was all political. I mean, there was nothing, absolutely nothing religious in how Mr. Modi arranged the entire show. Billions of dollars were spent to create that spectacle and BJP is the richest political party in India. And they used all of their machinery and money power. So, and what India witnessed that time was India never witnessed anything like that before. So people in orange and saffron were literally dancing on the streets. And not only to religious songs, but also to songs having provocative Islamophobic lyrics.
Oof.
And so it was horrible, yes. And
but this is 180 degrees away from what Nehru, I mean, India's first prime minister, wanted for India. I mean, this is Hindu revivalism, which he was trying to avoid.
Yeah, exactly. So the Hindu nationalists were at that time also very much against Mr. Nehru, who wanted to go on a secular path, taking all the minorities with him. So the ideological mentor of BJP, the RSS, they were up against Nehru. And so this Hindu nationalism is actually what killed Mahatma Gandhi, actually. So Hindu nationalists actually killed him because they thought that he was too generous to the Muslims. So you see, so yeah, so we are going that path actually. So it's really, I mean, what Nehru did and what the founding fathers we have a great constitution where we say that we the people, like, and taking with us all the minorities. And India is a very multicultural nation. So we have 200 million Muslims, and we have different indigenous groups. We have different caste groups, different religions, and even among the Hindus, we have so much. Like, I would say that the Hindu gods who are worshipped in the eastern parts of India are not worshipped in the western parts or in the northern parts. So we have a great multicultural diversity, and all of that is being like dismantled in front of our own eyes. So it's really very difficult for us to, like, whoever like believes in secularism, is very difficult for us to take.
I mean, you mentioned how many different groups there are within India. How, for example, does Mr. Modi's policy affect populations like the Sikh population?
Yeah, so you see, what Mr. Modi what Mr. Modi normally does is that he can communalize anything, like any issue he can communalize it. Like when we were having those farmer movements, like he brought in some farm laws which all the farmers thought were going against it would benefit the large corporations. So there were protests going all over India. Farmers came out all over the street. And that time there were like large farmer groups from Punjab, the Sikhs. So they have really agriculture is really developed there. So we have a lot of farmers coming from there. And what Mr. Modi did was, and his supporters, they labeled the farmers as Khalistani terrorists. So whoever comes up against Mr. Modi and his policies are labeled as terrorists. So students, when they come out on the streets protesting against violence on minorities, they are termed as Pakistanis. They are also termed as Muslims, you see. So and even last week, what happened was the opposition party Congress, in its manifesto, had said that if they come to power, they will redistribute wealth. And Mr. Modi, what he did was, like, he tweaked that statement, and he said, I mean, he went on a complete barrage of lies, saying that the Congress is saying that they will redistribute the wealth, they will take the wealth from the Hindus and give it to the Muslims. And what was worse was that he termed the Muslims as infiltrators and people who have more kids, like more children. So he's typically going back to the same Hindu nationalist bogey of that the Muslims are, they have a rising population which will overtake the Hindus and they will rule us. And so you don't expect this from a prime minister, right? Even Mr. Nehru was a prime minister, and now we see a prime minister who is clearly alienating 200 million of his population.
So,
So, yeah.
well, the BJP is India's richest political party as well. I mean, clearly. Is, I mean, and Mr. Modi, I mean, amongst the Hindu population is immensely popular. Is there a perception with the election looming of, well, invincibility? I mean, is it possible that the government can be dislodged?
Of course. Yeah. So what? So the silver lining of this coming from Mr. Modi is, like, there were reports coming from. We already have the first two phases of the elections, right? And there were reports coming from the ground after the first phase that there was a bit of voting which, like, the BJP didn't do well. So that was a ground report saying. And probably that made Mr. Modi nervous, so he went back to his anti-Muslim propaganda thing. So yeah, so if India votes on livelihood issues, like the job, like we are witnessing an unemployment that is a 45-year high unemployment right now, and we have food security issues. And so out of 1.4 billion people, 800 million people are right now like they are to be they are being given free ration because they can't feed themselves. So you can imagine more than 60% of the population are living on grants from the government.
Do these people
Subsidies
vote?
from the government. They vote, but the thing is that you know, in India's voting system, what happens is last year, I mean, in the last polls, BJP got just 37% of the votes, But the voting system is such that 37% of the votes can translate into a huge number of seats for the party, because the rest of the 63% votes are divided among the different parties, smaller parties, different opposition parties. Yeah. And just one more example, what happened in the second, in one of the seats in Surat, it's in Western India, in Gujarat, which is Mr. Modi's state. So in Surat, what happened was that the BJP candidate was declared winner even before a single vote was cast, because all the opposition parties, the Congress party had their, the candidate of the Congress party was cancelled. Like, it was said that there were some technical issues with the signatures he came up with of the proposers of his candidature. And in the same day, what happened was that 8 other candidates who were independent candidates withdrew from that election. So you can imagine a seat, a parliamentary seat, where the BJP won 75% of the votes last time. And so they are not confident this time as well. So, we don't know actually what will happen. But if India votes on livelihood issues, Mr. Modi will have a tough time. So that's why he's going back to his communal card.
Is it reasonable to assume that you're going to be, that India is going to be able to avoid that kind of election skullduggery?
Yeah, probably yes.
Why is the international community closely watching these elections? What are the ripple effects?
Well, the ripple effects is it's actually, if you think that 1.4 billion people will be electing their leader. And India is a big player in that region, in South Asia. And so with 1.4 billion people voting, and with democracy under threat, and 200 million minorities under threat in that country, and we have relationships with our neighbors also not going very good, with Pakistan and with Maldives, with Sri Lanka, and China also being not a good neighbor right now. And China is not having very good relations with any of the Western countries as well. So the Western countries also want India to be a counter to China. So that's why everyone's looking at the Indian elections with eagerness, mainly for the future of democracy. If the future of democracy was secure in India, I don't think people would have been so much concerned with the elections and how it's going.
Yeah, so it certainly has us all holding our breath. I mean, 15 years of Modi is just, too long.
Yeah. too long, and it has grave consequences for democracy.
Well, it's just, it's amazing as an Australian when you look at the numbers and think about the minorities of India is way, way larger than our majority here in Australia.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a huge country.
Just numbers of people and the effect that an election can have is just mind blowing when you think of that population size.
Yes, and in Australia we cannot even imagine people voting only on religious issues, right? So only on religious majoritarianism and not on actual issues like inflation and price rise and. Yeah, it's difficult to imagine sitting in Australia.
Well, to a degree, but it's interesting when one looks around and sees the lies that are peddled by people. And I'm thinking in particular about last year's referendum. But anyhow, thank you so much for joining. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Avaroop. We are very interested in what goes on in India, given the proximity and the intense commercial relationships we have with that country. It'll be interesting to see what transpires.
Thanks for having me.
That's Avaroop Gupta. He's a Curtin Uni PhD candidate, specialist in Indian politics, and a very interesting article of his it's just been published recently in The Guardian. In The Conversation. Why a controversial Hindu temple in India could prove pivotal to Narendra Modi's party in upcoming elections. Have a look at it, because it is very interesting for Australians to keep up on what's happening with our neighbours.